Are you ready for homeschooling to feel joyful again? Do you want to build closer relationships, remove some of the stress around planning, and enjoy learning with your children? Welcome to Your Morning Basket. I'm Pam Barnhill, a homeschool mom just like you, and I'm going to show you the magic and fulfillment that Morning Basket or Morning Time can bring to your homeschool. Grab your coffee or tea and let's get started. Jennifer Pepito is the host of the Restoration Home podcast, author of Mothering by the Book, and founder of The Peaceful Press. She is on a mission to help moms overcome fear and live with wonder and purpose. Her homeschool curriculum empowers this mission through heroic stories, heartwarming poetry, and engaging life skill development. Her resources create joyful memories among family, which lead to deeper connections and lasting relationships. She's been on some of our favorite podcasts, such as 1,000 Hours Outside, At Home with Sally, and the Read Aloud Revival. Jennifer lives in the mountains with her beloved family, where she enjoys reading aloud, working in her garden, and watching the sunset. Learn more about her at thepeacefulpress.com. Jennifer, welcome. Welcome back to the podcast, I do believe.
Thanks so much for having me, Pam. I'm always so excited to chat with you. We share a love of books and nurturing a literature-based homeschool. So I'm delighted to get to chat with you today.
It's always so much fun when you come. And the last time you and I chatted, you were telling me about this book, your new book, Habits for a Sacred Home. And I was so excited about this. So it is great to have you come back and talk to us a little more about that. But for right now, catch everybody up. Tell us a little bit about your homeschool journey and where you are in that process right now.
Yeah, for sure. I have been homeschooling for 26 years. I'm the mother of 7 children, ages 30 to 15. And this year, we're actually doing a hybrid system where they're taking some math and robotics or other classes at a charter school. And then we're doing some online classes while I've been doing some of my own classes. So we're all in this kind of study mode. And it's definitely changed the way we do homeschool life. But the fact is, with high school, I'm so grateful to have some of these like extra helpers, like a great math teacher or a class like robotics that I couldn't teach on my own. But we're still maintaining, you know, some morning time routines or some of those habits for a sacred home that we've been doing for the last 26 years.
Yeah, I love it so much. And I have found the same thing myself. Like high school's just a whole new ball game and it's not anything to be afraid of, you know, and in some ways it's like such a wonderful blessing. Like you have real people in your house to have conversations with, but it's just a different animal, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. Especially when, you know, I think that each child is so individual. And so we're trying to pay attention to what they need and what they want and what's important to them and sort of tailor an education for that. And for these two, especially, you know, having some extra science classes or having even some of the social aspects of having these like offsite classes has been a blessing. But I also, you know, this is the first year I've done this. Every other year until this, we had maybe here and there kind of a math class or something, but a lot more intensive at-home homeschooling, which I also adored. But, you know, I know for high school, it is such a wonderful option to still be able to tailor. Like I'm 100% in favor of homeschooling and high schooling because then you can tailor the education to them like we're doing now, even with using a sort of a hybrid system, because it can be such a waste of time to have a formal high school, in my opinion, where there's so many hours a day dedicated to things that they're probably not interested in. So I'm loving this experience we're in right now.
I love it too. I love it. And I love my new role as a homeschool mom in this endeavor as well. So yeah, 100% agree. All right. So talk to us a little bit about the book. Where did this idea of Habits for a Sacred Home come from? What was your inspiration for writing this?
Yeah. You know, I have read a few books in the past about how the monastery movement saved civilization. And I'm not Catholic. And so I think it's funny. Like for some people, they're like, what's going on? But I love that idea that there were some people in history who gathered a community around them and they wrote down the sacred texts. They kept doing the godly things that people had been doing for years. And you can look at this too in like Jewish communities for that matter, but just that people gathered a community around their values. And to some degree, according to some historians, they saved civilization. Like the ancient sacred texts were saved because the monastery movement collected them, wrote them down, made sure they stayed alive. I read about these things in a time where I was really concerned about culture. Like, there are so many things that feel a little bit off the rails, like a little bit destructive to family, a little bit concerning. I was even dealing with some fear, and I wrote about some of that in Mothering by the Book. But realizing that there have been, through history, many people who've lived through unnerving times or tumultuous times or chaotic times and still kept kind of a rule of life and godly spiritual disciplines really encouraged me that, hey, as mothers, we can keep doing this. We can keep nurturing almost like little monasteries or little schools for the service of the Lord in our homes. So it was so inspiring to think about the power that we have as mothers to continue saving civilization in a sense by keeping alive, you know, sacred texts in our home and beautiful art and godly values.
Oh, I love it so much. You know, Anthony Eslin, I don't know if you're familiar with him. He has this fabulous talk that he did on why the Dark Ages were dark and how, you know, in the monasteries at those times, you had so much learning going on and so many things that they were doing. And it's just a really great talk. If we can find it, we'll link it in the show notes. But yeah, this idea that there were these little pockets, no matter what was going on in civilization, and there were still lots of things in the Dark Ages that were not that great. You know, they might not have been completely dark, but they were not that great. But you had these little pockets of communities that were redeeming civilization. They were carrying on these old traditions. They were steeped in literature and music and art and all of this stuff. And yeah, I love that metaphor, that image of our homes being that in kind of the dark ages of society that we're experiencing right now, to be honest.
Yeah, 100%. And I just feel like it gives moms so much hope, because instead of just sort of going along with culture or feeling like there's nothing you can do about it, it gives us like an idea that, hey, we're not unusual in this experience and we can still push back against it. And in the book, I really tie the example of many like semi-modern women, people like Sabina Wurmbrand, who was living in communist, I think, Russia, and people like Ruth Bell Graham, really, who was living in her own kind of isolated situation while her husband was traveling as a minister, or Edith Schaefer, who lived in post-World War II Europe. And so these are people who also were living in somewhat of a difficult situation in some way and still kept the spiritual disciplines in their homes and made an impact on their culture as well. And so I think we can look at, you know, both a more ancient system like the Benedictines, but also some of these modern families, or, you know, semi-modern from the last century, who also were keeping alive spiritual disciplines in their home and creating an impact on culture.
I love that so much. Yeah, because we often look at like the monasteries and we think, oh, that was so far away. First of all, it was a bunch of men. So what does this have to do for us as mothers? But there's really so much that we can kind of glean from that. And I love the way that you do that by bringing it forward with some more modern examples in the book. Okay, so let's talk about some specific practices. What are some of the practices that you believe are kind of vital to restoring a sacred home and keeping this alive?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of different habits that come from the spiritual disciplines, and we've been working through them this year in my Restoration Home community. So for instance, there's a discipline of stewardship, of stewarding our time and our homes. And, you know, in the monastery movement, they said that every tool they had was a gift from God and was worth care. And so as we look at that value of stewardship, then what are some of the rules? You know, so in our little community, we are having moms check up on their children's chores after they do them, or having them, you know, work a few minutes a day on room care, or spend some time in quiet time every day. So they're stewarding their own inner life. And so I think that there's all these values like stewardship and simplicity and order and prayer and community and hospitality. But then from those sort of values or disciplines, you can extract quite a few habits. And that's what we're doing this year. One of the most important ones in my home is just having daily prayer with my children. You know, we have like a poetry pack basically for the school year with some of the maybe even catechisms like the Lord's Prayer, the Apostles' Creed, Psalm 100, Deuteronomy 6. And then, you know, keeping those at the forefront and reciting them, even as my children are more involved in outside the home classes or in online classes where I'm not as much in charge, I'm still making sure that some of these basic spiritual disciplines are happening in our home. But even more so, like, I think there's a lot of moms who, you know, maybe they're not even homeschooling anymore, and they're thinking, what about me? And really, these disciplines are more for you than they are for your children, because your children are going to be watching you ultimately living the life that you cultivate and that you model. And so even just keeping up some of these disciplines for yourself is so important in creating a more peaceful home and connected community.
I love that. I love that so much. So yes, boy, do I need somebody to help come alongside me and encourage me to go check up on whether or not those chores were done. That's one of the places where, like, that's way harder to me than quiet time in the morning by myself.
Yeah, for sure. And I do think accountability is so key in forward movement. You know, James Clear of Atomic Habits talks a lot about just 1% improvement.
Yeah.
And as we make, you know, 1%, like just keeping a 3-item morning routine or doing your top 5 in the morning, just some of these really simple things can bring so much order and peace to our day and make us feel like we're more in control of the day than out of control. Because I think parenting can feel very destabilizing. Like, children are new every day. They go through new seasons. There are new things to deal with every day. And so having just some sort of anchors to your life, and that's kind of the subtitle of the book, is 9 practices from history to anchor and restore modern families.
Yeah, I love that. And I love, like, that is so true. This idea that children are never the same, because it's just when you think you've got it figured out, just when you think you've got this season figured out and you've got like some good habits in place and you've got the schedule's working, then, you know, the 2-year-old needs to be potty trained or something happens or a big sickness comes, like it's the winter and everybody catches a stomach bug or the flu or something like that. And then all of a sudden it just completely throws you off kilter. And I love that you talked about starting with like a daily 3 or a daily 5, because that's something that once that tumultuous season passes, you can come back to it. Or if it's a new normal kind of season, whereas, you know, now somebody's waking up at 5 when they used to wake up at 6, you can kind of work around that as well and figure out where do you need to tweak just those little 3 to 5 things and start working on your 1% improvements again.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, you know, once you've worked on some disciplines, like you've made it a habit to pray as a family every day, then it starts to feel really uncomfortable to not do that habit. Just like teeth brushing, like at some point, maybe you didn't brush your teeth every day. And then you got to the point where you couldn't even go to bed at night without brushing your teeth. And I think habits become like that. They become so habitual that you feel uncomfortable not doing them. And that's a big part of what made the monastery movement so long lasting, is that they just had really ingrained habits. I think that as modern people, sometimes we're so addicted to freedom. And I think there's so much beauty in freedom, but really freedom without boundaries leads to chaos. And so I think having some of these sort of anchors or disciplines, and they're just biblical values that you could also find in the Ten Commandments or in some of the New and Old Testament writings. But I think that sometimes having things phrased in a new way can help bring new life or help us see them in a different light.
I love that. You know, Pope John Paul II has this great quote about how freedom is the right to do what you ought to do, not just to get to do what you want to do, but to do what you ought to do. And I always like think that's such a fabulous quote. I usually like roll it back around and like post it on social media again on the 4th of July, because I mean, that really is. We have things that we ought to be doing. And that's what freedom means, is that we can do those things that we ought to be doing.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me in the Little House on the Prairie books. I don't remember which one, maybe Little Town on the Prairie. Laura basically gives a speech about how, you know, you can't have freedom if you're not self-governing. Like, you can't even have a free country if you don't have self-government. And that means like that you're not going to steal from other people. And if you have people who are okay with stealing from other people, you will not be able to have a free society, because it degrades. And I think that's part of what we're doing in, you know, the sacred home, in some of these habits, is we're restoring a sense of civility, because there's a lot of beauty that's come out of the last few years of kind of the fight against shame and seeing how destructive shame is. But there has to be the balance where you also continue to have a standard for what's right and wrong, or else society goes off the rails.
Oh, yeah, totally. And I think it was John Adams who talked about this most, but all of the founding fathers, you know, They knew that this government that they were creating was only going to work with a moral people. And so as we lose our morals, we're really kind of losing our whole society as well. And so this is a great way for moms, instead of feeling despair, to come in and say, okay, how can I work? And Barbara Bush, I think, was the one who had this quote on, you know, the most important work is this work that you're doing around the dinner table. You know, that's how you change the world, or something like that. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah, and there's always so much hope, because I think a lot of American moms are really despairing because of the way they see culture sliding kind of. But it's like, you know, reading these books, I mean, Sabina Wormbrand was in the USSR. It was very difficult, but things are different there now. Like communism, for instance, to speak of one kind of social ill that comes from a degradation of society, it never lasts for very long because it just doesn't work. And so there'll always be a correction. But at least if we're building in some of those values that will stabilize at least ourselves and our own families, no matter what happens outside, then we're going to be able to weather whatever's happening in culture and ultimately say yes to God. And I love just what you said about Pope John Paul II and this idea that really, as believers, our ultimate goal is to take up our cross and live for Jesus. Like, we have a beautiful calling towards sainthood. And partly that means sometimes doing the harder thing of like getting up in the morning and praying with your kids instead of just scrolling social media when you wake up, or sometimes doing the harder thing of, you know, making sure that there's a little bit of order, like people are doing their chores in your home, or instead of just kind of checking out every day. And so I think as we can regain some of those sort of daily disciplines, we're going to have really more space for beauty and hope in our lives, because the framework is there. The sort of the hedges to keep a beautiful, happy life are there.
Yeah. And that's so good for moms to remember, because I think sometimes we feel like, what can I do? What can I do for the world? Because I'm just here in my home. And yeah, checking up to make sure that people have done their chores, praying with your children, those are the things that you can do. And that harkens back to that idea of the monastery. These monks were living these prayerful, contemplative lives, and they were impacting their own community and maybe just a little bit outside the walls. The Benedictines, especially, were not like going out and spreading the gospel or anything like that. They were like kind of small and cloistered, but they were still making a huge impact in doing that. And so let's talk a little bit about one of the things that St. Benedict is absolutely famous for, and that is his rule. So talk to me about a rule of life. What is this, and why should a mom care?
Yeah, and I think a lot of families might call it something different, like a mission statement or a vision statement. Like for myself, I have something called the Peaceful Life Workshop, and I kind of go through this document that has you define some of your values and write down what you want your children to remember about life in your home. And I know that you have some mom goal setting workshops. And I think those are kind of the same thing. Like a rule of life is basically just identifying the values that are important to your family and then living according to your values. And, you know, for us, we've always cared a lot about world missions and helping the poor. We've always cared a lot about nature, living a simple life and kind of having a, you know, natural surrounding. So some of these things that were values for us meant that we knew when to say no to other things. Because I think we live in a world where there are so many choices, and especially for homeschool moms, there's like 1,000 different curriculums they can choose. There's so many different books they could read. There are so many different classes they could take. But knowing a little bit what your life is about and what the meaning of life is for your family, what your rule of life is, can help simplify the choices and create more freedom. You know, not like with the Peaceful Press, we really do focus on compassionate stories that give people hope. And so that means that we're not maybe focusing on another part of the realm of knowledge that could be introduced to a child. You know, whereas like say Ambleside Online, they're focusing on the stories that Charlotte Mason read. So I think every curriculum even is going to focus on almost a different set of values, and identifying that actually is going to help moms sort of identify what's important to them and what they want to teach their children. So I think a rule of life is so freeing because it gives you sort of like those boundaries, those ideas of what's really important to you. And then it frees you from having to try and do everything because you know what the important things are.
I love that so much. Yeah, we teach in our autopilot planning class, put your homeschool year on autopilot. The very first step is to create your homeschool vision, because there's no way that you can create a plan for your homeschool unless you've made a vision of what education is supposed to look like. And then we tell people, like, it's the spaghetti for your homeschool wall. Like, you're just going to throw things and see, like, what is sticking with this vision and what's not sticking, you know, with this vision. And, like, even before you make purchases, because you're right, like, you could spend $700 or $800 on a curriculum, get it home, get the shrink wrap off of it, and realize this is not what we want to do. But you get caught up in the bright, shiny moment of all of it. Sarah McKenzie had something she calls the rule of six, which I think is fabulous. I know you've read St. Benedict's Rule, you know, and even it's still a good, what, 50 or 60 pages of all, you know, all of these different rules and things like that. And so I think kind of distilling it down and saying, like, these are the five most important things. These are the six most important things to us. These are the things that we're going to strive to do every single day as a family is way more attainable for moms.
Yeah. And because some of it, you know, in the St. Benedict rule of life, it was written for a community of men, of adult men. You know what I mean? So it's not all applicable, which is why I tied it with the lives of women of faith, because then you could see in the life of, and some of these people, like, they didn't set out to be famous. I don't think St. Benedict set out to be famous. Like, these people were just being faithful in the little things. And that's what I want moms to realize, is just you looking in your children in the morning and smiling at them. You know, reading the Bible in your home. You making breakfast for your family. All of these things are so precious. They're so important. Like, there are so many people who are dealing with very serious mental health problems. And part of it is just nobody looked them in the eyes and told them they're precious. Nobody read the Bible to them. Nobody gave them a vision for life and for hope that comes from having a godly set of values that guides your home.
Oh, yeah. And that's so important. I love that so much. And I was giggling because this morning, my youngest actually got up and made breakfast for all of the rest of us. So, moms, if you keep this up, one day they'll make you waffles on a school morning.
Yeah. And it is interesting, because that is, like, when we present to our children even the idea that life is about love and loving others, then you don't set yourself up to be in the position of being the only one trying to meet their needs. Like, it will help them to live with a more of a sense of purpose themselves. Like, that, you know, my children, we were out of town for a couple of weeks, and, you know, one came up and stayed with them for a few days. Another one came over and helped them with dinner. Like, they lived as a community. They worked as a community, in a sense, even while we were gone. I think that's what we're looking for, is children who will duplicate the sense of community that we're building. And that's what really transforms the world, is that you haven't just created your own little school for the service of the Lord, but you're actually, it's being duplicated in other homes, and not just our children's homes, but as we live a more visionary life, and then we welcome people to come in. Like, we, on this trip, we were with a lot of younger people. There was a lot of people who didn't have families yet, but even just my husband and I having loving interactions with each other on this trip meant so much to these people, and was such a, like, a hopeful vision for them.
Yeah. And that work that your kids are doing, coming to help the ones who are still at home, I mean, that's the fruit of what you've modeled for them, you know, for years and years. And that's where you're going to see it come out one of these days. I think one day we do kind of get to see some of the fruit of all of the work that we put in through the years, though sometimes it's hard to see it in the middle of it. So, looking at Habits for a Sacred Home, this seems like a great book for a mother's morning basket. So could you break it down a little bit for me and tell me kind of how it's structured so that moms could use this?
Yeah, for sure. So each chapter basically identifies a different rule of life from the rule of St. Benedict. And then it also pairs it with a woman in history who exemplified that rule in some way. So there's a biographical sketch, a value. And then as well, at the end, there's a study guide with opportunities for you to kind of identify which of the practices from that value you will want to apply in your own home. There's a recipe, there's a prayer, there's a scripture verse for the value. And then as well, if you pre-order and go to my website, habitsforasacredhome.com, you can download a pack of poetry and scripture and sayings that also uphold that value for the month.
And okay. So I know we're going to have some people who are really interested in that pre-order offer. So give me the dates and the details on that one.
Yeah, so that's available now, and it's at habitsforsacredhome.com. We'll keep it up for a few months even after the book releases. It just has some opportunities like a book list, because each chapter also has a few other books you could read then about the person featured or about the sort of value that's featured. So yeah, it makes a great, you know, mom's book club or book study or morning basket resource.
Yeah, I love it so much. And doing the pre-order and getting that extra little packet would make this wonderful morning time for moms during her own quiet time as well. So this just looks absolutely fabulous. So Jennifer, thank you so much. Thank you for coming on and thank you for creating such a wonderful resource that's going to be so life-giving to moms out there. And thank you for sharing your heart with everybody. We really appreciate it. And tell us again where we can find the book.
Yeah, habitsforsacredhome.com is where you can put your pre-order number in and get all those bonuses and even get more information about the book.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Pam. It's always such a delight to chat with you.
Thanks so much for listening to Your Morning Basket. If you are ready to spend less time planning and more time engaged in learning with your children, join Your Morning Basket Plus, a monthly membership with everything you need to start a morning time practice in your homeschool. To join, head on over to ymbplus.com and I'll see you there.